Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
With all the changes in the last 2 years and what people are thinking about, it makes you wonder what the big story will be at the end of year three. I guess we'll have to wait and find out. But you only have to wait a moment to find out what Fred Krueger, who focuses on nature and spirituality, and David Johns of the Wildlands Institute are pondering when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wildside News. We continue with this special second anniversary show of the Wildside News to get the pulse of the planet from people who work in the fields and forests of change. Fred Krueger has been pioneering the depths of spirit and nature as he takes people out to the wild places and opens the book of nature. It's always good to find out what's on Fred's mind.
Well, thank you, Sydney. We've got half a dozen programs right now that we've got cooking on the stove. We're continuing with our wilderness explorations to articulate the spiritual values of wilderness, opening the book of nature where we discern the lessons of the land. That's continuing. We've got a big program coming up in early May to go to Washington, D.C. and talk to legislators and speak with the administration. We expect a meeting at the White House. I think our biggest program is going to involve mounting a campaign to at least moderate some of the influences of climate change. We've got a four-part program that begins with education for religious groups, and then once they get a program of awareness of the implications of what will happen as the weather changes, we're going to be offering churches the chance to solarize their building. We're going to have a deal where they can get discounts on solar panels and a plan where they can recruit volunteers to do the installation. And we have an engineer and professional company that will oversee that. Then at the same time, we're going to start planting trees in the tropics. On average, every person contributes something between 15 and 20 tons of carbon dioxide every year. If they plant trees, they can begin to sequester or drain out of the atmosphere some of that carbon dioxide. Each tree over a span of about 30 years will sequester a ton and a half of CO2. And so we're going to ask individuals to zero out their carbon debt by planting at least a dozen trees a year, and we'll host facilities in Guatemala and in Belize where land will be set aside and there won't be any logging, there won't be any wood cutting or charcoal burning. We're going to grow trees, and it'll be part of wildlife habitat. And in this way, people can start to reduce their consumption, and then right behind that comes the fourth part of our climate program, and that's lifestyle change. We've got to change the way that we behave as a people so that we don't continue on this CO2 production treadmill. That means we're going to have to use solar, use wind, find a variety of alternatives to the energy that drives our lives and society. I think we have to remember that the whole of society is organized around energy. Everything that moves, whether it's food production, it's our transportation, it's our heating, and sometimes even the clothing that we wear is all driven by energy, and so let's start changing, and we have a responsibility, I believe, to embody those solutions in our own lives. If we don't do it in our own lives, how in the world are we going to expect industry or government to make the changes? Because they will respond to the behavior of the largest numbers of people. And so we're starting. And I hope that if any of your listeners are interested in some of the solutions that we're going to propose, they can contact us.
And how should they do that?
Well, our address is 887 Sebastopol Road in Santa Rosa, California, 95407. We're the Religious Campaign for Forest Conservation.
And how about a website?
Our website is creationethics.org, and you know, we were just hacked, and it was beaten into smithereens. We're reestablishing it right now.
You work a lot in the religious community.
Yeah, that's right.
An interesting thing that's happening, there's a change happening on the planet, and thank God that it's happening as well. Now the churches are getting involved in becoming aware of this particular issue. Give us a sense of what your feeling is about how that's growing.
Well, it's growing across the spectrum. Just on this issue of forestry, which is our emphasis, Roman Catholics now have a statement. And significantly, down in Mexico, the bishops issued a pastoral calling all people to be alert that forest issues is a life and death issue, and that caused the president down there, Vicente Fox, to declare their own national security emergency in that saving forest and clean water. Protestant churches, they are strong on seeing that forests have to be protected. In the synagogues, the Central Conference of American Rabbis has called for an end to all commercial logging on national forests and efforts to preserve old growth everywhere. And the same thing with evangelicals and the Orthodox churches as well. We're all beginning to link up on this issue, at least in terms of the thought leaders of religious groups. Now, here in California, we are pushing an initiative to end all cutting on private land, plots larger than 40 acres, of anything that's older than the state of California. This is called the Heritage Tree Initiative, and we are solidly supporting efforts for legislators to be educated to the importance of anything that's going to save old growth.
You know, it's interesting in talking with you and talking about the efforts to save forests and planting trees and getting involved in helping to sequester that CO2. You know, it occurred to me that what you're really talking about, particularly as it relates from a spiritual side, are sacred places. That what you're really helping to do is establish and maintain sacred places around the planet. That's
well,
just
my
take.
Well, I think that's true, but we're seeing everything as having a sacred dimension, and so we see a goal of integrating our lives into the ecosystem of the planet, and that requires a value shift, because what we believe is really shown in how we find ourselves to be living. And if the way that we find ourselves to be living, and that involves consumerism and high-speed transportation and all those forces that are assaulting the life support systems of the planet, then we better change what we believe. And that's the test of what you believe, how you find yourself to be living.
We're talking with Fred Krueger. Fred, I want to thank you for being a regular, actually, on the Wild Side News. You always bring terrific ideas and content, and as well, your work is making such a difference. My hat's off to you.
Thank you, Cindy.
We hear a lot these days about the demise of the wild creatures. Most of us can only hope that something can be done, and a few are making plans for reconnecting the broken fabric of life. David Johns puts the pieces together with his Wildlands Institute. How have the events of these last 2 years forged his current thoughts?
You know, there are two things that have been a lot on my mind of late. One is the fact that the declines that we've been talking about and describing in the natural world, the loss of species, the unraveling of ecosystems, are speeding up in a way that I think even in our worst thoughts we were hoping they would not. even though the Earth's population has, the growth has slowed a bit, the growth in consumption has just been enormous and more than made up for the slowing in the population growth. And while no one can begrudge, you know, people in the developing world a better standard of living, the kinds of changes that are occurring in China, in India, and in some other parts of the world are just changing the equation so rapidly. And the kinds of things that are being done to protect biodiversity and protect ecosystems are, there's just, you know, it's a little bit around the edges. It's, you know, the fear is that it's just not going to be adequate, and like a big oil tanker, you know, you don't see the reef until you're about 5 miles away, and if it takes 10 miles to stop or turn the ship, you've got a serious problem. And I guess the other thing that has been certainly troubling me, although there's a lot of, you know, hopeful things on the horizon and people doing so much good work, is that the United States, the most, you know, powerful country on Earth with all of these resources, is undertaking policies that are just exactly the wrong policies. It's sort of like one of those bad science fiction movies from the 1950s where you know the people in the story are going to do just the wrong thing. They're going to go into the wrong room and they're going to cross the monster in just the wrong way. And of course, if they didn't do that, there'd be no story, right? In a grade B movie. But one hopes better from one's political leaders. But the overreaching, you know, the squandering of our wealth in the pursuit of oil, the squandering of chances to work cooperatively with other people in the world and to invest our resources in the kinds of things that might lead us closer to some kind of a society that's gentler with the earth, that learns to appreciate and respect that thing which makes our lives possible. It's not just that we're not doing the right things; it's that we're doing just the wrong things. And I fear that because people are so distracted by the war and by talk of terrorism, that they're just not seeing what is happening. So those are, I guess, those are my two reflections on the last couple of years. For all of that, I have to say, people are certainly continuing to work very hard and very creatively to try to protect life on this planet. And I think as long as people continue to do that, there is hope. But we also have to get much, much better at it and find ways of reaching out to people that we have not been able to reach out to before. We can't do it on our own. We need lots of help, and we're not being very successful in getting that help, partly because I think we're still don't quite know how to talk to people about what we need to talk to them about.
It's an extremely difficult dialogue because it's uncharted territory. As I listen to what you're thinking, and I think about these things myself and try to address them, the planet has never had to face this type of issue and be able to have the capacity to talk about it in advance. And I think to a large extent, we don't even know what it is that we're supposed to be talking, as you're talking about. As you say, when you think about China, you think about India, and the fact that they're apparently moving towards consumerist societies. What do we say to people like that from our wealth and our luxury?
Sure.
It's a dialogue I don't quite know how to talk about.
No, and of course, we can't say too much that anyone is going to listen to until we get our own consumption under control. And even talking to other Americans and Europeans and Australians, Japanese, it's very, very difficult to find the lever that helps make clear to people the individual choices they make day in, day out, with larger policy kinds of choices and their willingness to get involved in the policy process. But, you know, we've created this huge machine that we don't know how to run. It's like once you build it and push the on button, we've lost sight of the switch, and
right.
And nobody's quite sure that, well, geez, even if we could find the switch, do we really want to, we want to turn it off? Can we not just turn it down? Can't we have our cake and eat it too? Come on. That's part of the problem too,
yeah,
I think, is
yeah.
We've got a lot of hard decisions to make, and no one wants to, put their leadership on the line, I think, at least those that are already placed in leadership positions, by asking people to make those hard questions. And it's so easy for when others of us raise those issues just to be ignored, or we just haven't found the right way of conveying those choices to people.
It seems, there's been a terrific amount of energy and investment and will and power directed towards creating, in essence, a one-world government of sorts, which seems to be the direction it's moving in. And quite honestly, there's another side and another vision, which is a brave new world as opposed to a one world. We need some really new, courageous thinking on a global scale here and leadership, because, as you say, that ship isn't necessarily going to make that turn. I just don't think it is.
No, and I think that we're always sort of playing catch up when we talk about the world becoming more integrated. That integration is, first of all, it's a very unequal integration, and it's being led by those with very, very narrow interests, large business firms, using the WTO treaty and other economic kinds of treaties, which are hard, hard law, and the entire direction is growth. And when one thinks about material growth, what one is really talking about is the increased transformation of nature from its state as it evolved into products and commodities, and the rest of us are simply playing catch up, trying to find ways of ameliorating that or dealing with it. And we really need to get ahead of the curve and figure out new ways of not just thinking, but acting in a way that gets us ahead of that curve and allows us to actually create something that we can steer.
It's interesting in talking to people, as I have been for this show, kind of summarizing where we're at right now. The change that I notice is that people have a leg in each camp, which is sort of interesting. I know that you've worked very much on very localized, large-scale, regional projects, but I find a lot of people who are really putting one foot in the global issues and saying we really need to address this, and at the same time trying to stay busy with their focused work in their own backyard. Are you finding that to some extent being the case?
Oh, I think so. I mean, the model that the Wildlands Project developed of large-scale conservation planning and implementation is something that virtually all of the global conservation groups, World Wildlife Fund and many, many others, talk about large-scale conservation and cross-border conservation and all of those kinds of things, and lots of regional groups all over the world talk in those terms as well, and work is moving ahead there, and very, very important work. But again, we're trying to set pieces of the earth aside when this great machine continues to claim more and more and more of the planet to again transform into commodities. So we're being essentially marginalized, and as important as I think direct protection is, that we have to focus on that and emphasize that. If we don't deal with these larger issues as well, there was I believe it was at the World Parks Congress a couple of years ago, there were some conservationists, very highly placed international conservationists, talking about the need to, the only way protected areas would survive is that they were able to sort of pay for themselves and to show real concrete benefits for development, and that if they couldn't, the economies of the world would simply have to take those protected areas and use them for development. And one of the one of the most wonderful conservationists in the world, Bittu Sehgal, who works in India and is a protector of the tigers, got up and responded, and he said, look, you have not been able to solve the problems of poverty by, claiming control of 90% of the earth, and now you're saying you want the last 5 or 10%. Well, you're not going to solve the problems with the last 5 or 10% if you couldn't solve it with the 90%, and you're not getting it. So,
you know, boy, I was waiting for you to say that. I didn't know that was coming. That's what I wanted to have someone say, and he said it. Wonderful. That's absolutely right on.
Yeah, Bittu is a wonderful, wonderful guy, and he really knows, he's working in an area, a part of the world where there's tremendous poverty, there's tremendous biodiversity, and he's right there on the front line, and he knows, I guess I can't say that word on the radio, but he knows that material which people sometimes hold forth, and one questions its value.
Yes.
So,
Dave Johns, we're going to talk again.
Okay.
And I always appreciate hearing from you and your thoughts, and I know that you're one who understands the importance of communication.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Take care, Sydney.
Bye-bye. And so we begin year 3 of the Wild Side News. Talks of a difficult hurricane season, ongoing problems with the oceans, more forays into the minds of the wild creatures, the this way and the that way of our forests and wild places. We keep you informed each week, bringing you the intricacies of the wild places from the minds of the Earth's guardians. What will be the big story on our 3rd anniversary? You'll just have to keep tuning in each Thursday, or any time on the archives when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.